First, the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities has released its budget policy goals for the 2019 through 2021 fiscal period. The group, which advocates for Wisconsinites with disabilities and their families, outlined seven main policy areas that they say changing could help a number of people throughout the state. Policies range from transportation access to employment opportunities to support for caregivers. Our next guest is here to talk about those policies and what reforms they'd like to see in the state over the next few years. Beth Swedeen is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. Beth, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
So the budget is still a little ways off. Why are you getting this out there now to try to get these ideas on the table?
Yeah, great question. I think most people aren't thinking about that at all right now because the governor, whoever the governor will be, won't announce a budget until probably January or February. But a lot of the state agencies right now are putting together their ideas. So the Department of Public Instruction, Department of Health Services, they're all having to get budgets into the governor by September 15th. So we wanted to get some ideas out for early consideration and also so that people across the state know that they're being heard and that their ideas are something that they can take to their elected officials earlier than, you know, during the winter.
And before we get to the specific suggestions, do you have, are you reaching out to people with disabilities around the state? Are they kind of informing you as to what their priorities and
needs are? We are a council of people. We are the state's designated developmental disabilities council made up of people with developmental disabilities and their family members. And our charge really is to listen to all corners of the state, consider what the pressing issues are, and then think about policy solutions and public programs that can be improved to make people with disabilities have the lives that anyone would want and, you know, use services in a way that keeps them in their communities, keeps them participating in daily life, working, playing, you know, recreating, doing all the things that anyone else would want to do in Wisconsin. So, yes, we are listening to those folks. We've been out to all parts of the state, and the issues that we talk about are things that really are on the minds of so many people with disabilities and their families right now.
And one of the items on your list involves something we've talked about a fair amount on the show in the past, caregivers, and that's professional paid caregivers and people who aren't getting paid for it, family members, things like that. Let's start with the paid side of things.
Sure.
It sounds like we have a shortage of available professional caregivers.
Well, Wisconsin has a shortage, but the nation has a shortage as well. And a lot of it is just demographics. We have an aging population. You know, people are getting older. They're living in healthy lives into their 80s and 90s. And then we have increasing numbers of people with disabilities living longer lives as well. And then we have a smaller amount of younger people in the workforce. And so as the baby boomers reach retirement, you know, and in even older people, then we're seeing that there's fewer and fewer people even available to do care. And then at the same time, the wages haven't kept up with what the demands of the job are. So we can see people going to Target or going to Home Depot and getting a job and getting a couple dollars an hour more than a paid caregiver who really maybe wants to stay in the business of helping other people, but it's just something that they can't afford to do. So a lot of the solutions we're looking at are ways to really incentivize the job, to recognize that it's really important work, that it's valuable, that people who do it care, and that they deserve the wages and benefits that anybody who's doing a high-level job would deserve.
I want to talk about the impact here. There was a survey a while back for people with disabilities talking about, you know, how has your life been impacted when there is that gap in caregiving? Can you talk about the sort of effect that can have?
Sure. Our organization is part of the Survival Coalition, and that's 30 different disability orgs across the state. And we did do a survey a year and a half ago or so, and over 500 people responded. And virtually all of them, like 95%, said they had trouble finding caregivers. More than 45% said that they'd missed seven or more shifts in the last month. And when you start missing that many shifts, what you see is people who are forced to stay in a chair overnight, you know, with no ability to get out of the chair, people getting bed sores, people who miss medications, who don't have access to food or water because they can't move themselves. And all of a sudden, something that becomes an annoyance is all of a sudden a very critical health concern or acute health concern. So we actually know people who say, hey, I'm a young person, but because I can't get enough caregivers, the recommendation is I should live in a nursing home. Well, that's just not appropriate. And it's not anything that anyone wants to do. So the caregiver shortage is to the point where it is at a crisis.
You mentioned hoping the state can help incentivize people to get into caregiving. I guess translate that that a little bit into budget terms. What kind of things specifically could the state do?
Well, one of the things we're looking at is looking at the number of caregivers who are in the profession already who are on BadgerCare or other Medicaid programs because they're low-wage workers. And so could we lift the Medicaid wage requirement, or, you know, to a higher level, maybe 300% of poverty instead of 100 or 200, and make them eligible for Medicaid, because that is a health insurance plan. And a lot of caregivers do not have health insurance right now, or they're already on Medicaid. And what we hear a lot of provider networks saying to us is, hey, I've got some really fantastic workers, and they're only working like 15 or 20 hours a week because they need to keep their Medicaid. So if we could raise the amount that they could keep, then they can keep the insurance that's so important to them. And we get that many more hours of really great care in the community.
A lot of caregiving is provided by maybe friends or loved ones. Mm-hmm. Are there things the state could do to help them out?
I think just recognizing family caregivers, you know, businesses can be involved in that, understanding the need for flexibility. So there are lots of things that just, I think, just when you recognize caregiving, when you say we're going to pay attention to it, looking at leave policies, that sort of thing, those kinds of things can help too. And then we're also looking at, back to the paid caregiver thing, you know, there are parts of the state where maybe just across the border, the state allows a higher wage. So those are the things we need to look at, too, is, you know, are we losing workers to Minnesota or to Illinois? And can we make sure that the wages are equitable in those kind of border areas?
We're talking to Beth Swedeen with the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities, looking at some priorities for the state budget in particular. They say could make a big difference for people with disabilities here in the state. Beth, another priority area, access to transportation for people with disabilities. Right. And I imagine this is not a one size fits all. It might be different in a city with a big public transit system versus a rural area. What kind of things are you looking at?
Yes, I just came from a statewide meeting, and the number one issue at this meeting across aging groups and disability groups was that lack of access to transportation when you need it and on time and going where you need to go. And you're right. It's one of those issues that is so dependent on where you live in the state. And there are many, many transportation alternatives that stop at a city line or stop at a county border. And as you know, many people work just across a county line, or they work in the next city over. And so they're literally not able to get to work. And many, many people with disabilities don't have cars. They don't drive. And so the idea that we need to figure out some really creative solutions here around blending or more like braiding public funding sources and thinking about some creativity so that people can get where they need to go is so important. And it really is a huge factor in allowing people with disabilities to be part of the workforce.
Right. I wanted to ask about that. How big a deal breaker is this for someone maybe with a disability who wants to live independently and get to a job, hold down a job?
Right.
This is something that is a wall.
Everything is tied to transportation. So, you know, getting to your doctor's appointments on time so that you can maintain your health, getting your prescriptions when you need them, going to the grocery store. But a lot of people say this is the deal breaker for me on either finding a job or keeping a job.
And you mentioned working with senior groups. Is this something where the state could answer maybe a couple of concerns at the same time with people with disabilities and with seniors who want to live independently still?
Right, right. And actually, it's something that is an issue for low-wage workers as well. I mean, a lot of people cannot afford to maintain a car, or they have a car, and if it's not reliable, it impacts their ability to be reliable on their job. So we think that there's a lot of different advocacy groups and different populations in the state that when we come up with creative transportation solutions, they're all going to benefit.
We're talking to Beth Swedeen right now, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. She's with us to talk about policy changes her organization would like to see change to help people with disabilities in the state. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about your life? What kind of changes would you like to see if you're a person with disabilities yourself, if a family member is? What do you think are these issues of transportation, finding caregiving important to you? Or are there other issues that you think, hey, this little change by the state or maybe big change could make a big difference in our lives? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation about living with disabilities in Wisconsin and state policies in particular that affect people with disabilities. Beth Swedien is with us, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. Her organization just released a list of 7 policy changes they'd like to see tackled by the state, especially in next year's budget. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a disability, what would you like to see change in Wisconsin, maybe at the state level, to make things work a little better? If you're a parent or caregiver, what do you think? How would this? What do you need to see to change your life, make things a little easier? What issues do you face? What roadblocks do you run into? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to Mary Ann on the phone now in Hurdle. Mary Ann, hi.
Hi. I have a comment. My husband's recent stroke victim. And so, as a result, he is unable to get into a car, stand and pivot and get into a car. So he is restricted to a wheelchair, and this is not likely to change. Now, we have a house, so it's not as if we're able to use, like, Medicaid or Badger Care or a lot of the organizations that help with transportation. So if he goes to the doctors, it's $150 to transport him there and get him back home. And Burnett County, Wisconsin, the ADRC, has absolutely no facility to help people in our situation.
Mary Ann, thanks a lot for the call. Are there things out there, Beth, that you think could help in Mary Ann and her husband's county or elsewhere in the state?
Well, I'm glad Mary Ann mentioned the Burnett County Aging and Disability Resource Center, the ADRC, because that was my first thought. And the fact that maybe they don't have the resources means that I would personally suggest she call the Department of Health Services and ask for the entity that oversees the ADRCs, because I would think that they would be able to help with some of that. The other thing that comes to mind is every region of the state has an independent living center, or ILC, independent living center. So I can't remember which one is in that northwestern part of the state, but you can, if you Googled independent living centers, they are, a lot of them have equipment on loan, and they also have different resources to help people with that kind of issue. A third resource, because she mentioned a house, is there's a place, or there's an organization in Madison that serves statewide called Movin' Out, and they oftentimes can help with home modifications and provide either low interest, no interest loans, or even funding for home modifications. So those are kind of three of the ideas that I have right off the bat.
Thanks for the call, and good luck to you. We'll go now to Mark in Oneida County. Mark, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, what do you want to tell us about, Mark?
Well, I'm a 60-year-old person, just had a heart attack, which affected my eyes, and I'm having problems getting transportation to the doctors, getting transportation to get food, and just get out of the house.
Right. And so, Mark, do you know about the Aging and Disability Resource Center?
I've been to ADRC in Rhinelander, yes.
Okay, and have they been able to help at all with any ideas?
Well, they try, but they give me things, and I missed my last 2 doctor's appointments because the people they sent me to get a ride, I stood at the end of my driveway for an hour, and they never showed, they never called. And I'm really frustrated.
Is that the non-emergency medical transportation? Is that what?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Again, I would, I hate to sound like a cranky person, but, contacting them, the provider, but also contacting the Department of Health services to complain about the quality. We hear this, unfortunately, over and over again about non-emergency medical transport, and they really need to be accountable. And there are lots of ways that they could, like, call you in advance, you know, to let you know if they're late or if they need directions. And we hear this so many times. And again, it's to the point I made earlier, Rob, of people missing critical medical care because their ride didn't show up on time. And if the ride shows up an hour late, sorry, the doctor has seen two more patients and you're out of luck.
Mark, thanks for the call and good luck to you. That non-emergency medical transportation, is that something you are hoping to see more resources put into?
We actually have a request in our budget papers around kind of a pay for performance. In other words, we think that whoever the state contracts with should really be held accountable for the rides that they give. Are they on time? Are they communicating with the client? You know, what's the percentage rate? And then what's the complaint process? And that they should be paid accordingly. You should not be paying taxpayer dollars for something that doesn't meet your needs and doesn't get you where you need to go.
Talking to Beth Swedeen from the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities, looking at priorities for people with disabilities in upcoming state budgets. Before I go back to our callers, Beth, I want to get into another issue area in this in your policy statement here, and that's education for people with disabilities. What are you looking at?
Right. So we know that students with disabilities, including those with even the most significant disabilities, can make great headway in public education with the right supports in place. Unfortunately, funding for special education in the state of Wisconsin has been held steady or stagnant for the last decade. And as you probably know, inflation, cost of everything has gone up. A lot of technologies that would help students, you know, there's a price tag on those, and they haven't kept pace with what the students need. And so we are recommending a significant increase in special education funding to kind of meet that gap and really bring schools the resources they need so that they can meet students' needs and make sure that they're successful and that they're prepared for adulthood.
Yeah. Can you talk about the difference that can make after graduation?
Oh, absolutely. Because students with significant disabilities actually have access in Wisconsin and across the country to 3 extra years of education between 18 and 21. And in school districts that have the funds, they're oftentimes getting them into real jobs and providing transportation out to job sites. They're teaching them skills to live in their own apartments. But those things cost money and they're based in the community. And oftentimes those kinds of programs, when cuts have to be made, are the first to go, because quality is the first thing to go. And so getting those funds in place, we know has a direct line to better outcomes for students with disabilities. And we're always advocating that those resources need to be available, because they're a great investment now into the future of people who can really contribute and make a difference.
Let's bring on another caller now. Mark is with us in Wauwatosa. Mark, hi.
Hi.
Hi, what'd you want to bring up, Mark?
Well, you know, the subject of caregiver contracts, my wife was a caregiver for her mother for 5 years with, you know, with Alzheimer's. Her mother finally passed away, you know, this year. And, you know, we took her on right away as soon as her husband died. You know, she needed care. And it took us about a year to learn about caregiver contracts. And then it took a little while to convince my brother-in-law, come on, hey, you know, the mother-in-law had the money, but she had, you know, too much money that she didn't qualify for government care. You know, she had a house that was paid for and money in the bank, and she had income coming in, too, from Social Security and so on, and pension money, too. So, you know, my wife structured it, got a lawyer to sign off and notary public and all this, and the brother-in-law, who was the power of attorney, you know, he finally agreed to it after a while, and you know, she got to pay. And so, you know, that helped us make ends meet for those years. But a little public awareness campaign that you can do this would be useful.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Beth, I'm not familiar with this, but is this something that I should be more familiar with, and we should know more about this?
I'm not aware either of caregiver contracts and what exact context he's talking about.
But does the state do enough to, give guidance to those family caregivers? Is there more the state could do apart from these contracts?
I think that there's probably things that a lot of us could do to help support family caregivers. I guess I'm not sure about the sort of internal nature where he got the information about contracting. But yeah, I think that there's always guidance and best practice kinds of ideas around that. And oftentimes, you know, just doing a search. I know our national organization and our board have some resources on our website.
Thanks for that call, Mark. One area that I was really quite unfamiliar with, I got to say, Beth, is improved self-direction as a policy goal. This has to do with guardianship and related issues. Can you talk a little bit about what that means?
Sure. So a lot of people with disabilities and older adults, you know, who experience dementia or other kinds of disabilities, their family members are worried about their safety, and so they seek guardianship. And what we're finding in the disability world is a lot of young people, given the right training, preparation, that sort of thing, actually don't need a guardian. They might need a supported decision, you know, some help in support in making decisions. We were actually part of a movement to get a law in place in April that recognizes supported decision making so people don't have to go to guardianship. And we really believe that if you are a guardian, you probably need some training and to be better equipped to understand how you can help fully support a person to make as many decisions as possible for themselves.
And that there would be a time period, a renewal of guardianship in some cases?
Correct. I mean, were any of us at the age of 18 fully capable of making the wisest decisions of all? And so we're thinking, you know, your brain's still developing at 18. That's no different if you have a disability. Let's think again when you're maybe 26 or 27. You know, have you learned enough that maybe this isn't as much of a need now?
Beth, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Beth Swedeen is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. She joined us today to talk about policies the organization would like to see changed or improved, looking especially ahead at next year's state budget, in order to help Wisconsinites with disabilities, their families, and their caregivers. Still time to share your thoughts, maybe your experiences. You can do that over on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or you can always email us and let us know what's going on. Ideas@WPR.org. Are these issues that affect your life or the lives of your family?